Teddy Gelman here, representing WVUD Sports. Football season is quickly approaching, and WVUD is your home for the most up-to-date analysis of Delaware Blue Hens football. Our 2017 season coverage gets underway on Thursday, August 31st, with a special broadcast of Blue Hen Sports Cage live outside Trabant University Center. Jake Lampert and I run the cage from 5 to 7, and then Brandon Holvek and Amid Quadri have the call for the season opener against Delaware State. Once again, that is Thursday, August 31st, for a Blue Hen Sports Cage special outside Trabant, and then it's football. WVUD is your home for Delaware football, field hockey, and ice hockey this fall. Check us out at WVUD.org on the Sports tab and on Twitter at WVUD Sports. Trying something new today with these sports updates. This is The Cage here on WVUD. Teddy Gelman along with Brandon Holvek and Amid Quadri. Our top stories, as Brandon mentioned in the open, the MLB trade deadline is approaching very quickly. Top names on the market, one already gone, one not performing, and plenty of names still to go. We'll be talking about all of that during tonight's show.
Darvish was rocked yesterday, and maybe his last start as a Texas Ranger. He allowed 10 runs. The Miami Marlins crushed the Texas Rangers, and it continues a pretty poor string for the Texas right-hander. Darvish has a 7.20 ERA in his last five starts. Teams have a short-term memory. When we get close to the trade deadline, it does not help his value, as GM John Daniels might put the right-hander on the move.
The CONCACAF finals were yesterday, also known as the Gold Cup, USA versus Jamaica. USA coming out with the win 2-1 in full time. Mr. Clutch Jordan Morris with the late goal in the 88th minute to seal the deal. USA back on top.
We'll start with Delaware football today. They open camp tomorrow. A lot of athletes on campus. And very quickly, we are approaching this year. We're able to play that new promo during the open. And what are we now? 34 days until the first day with the Trabant show. Very excited about what is to come this year. And so we'll have the Trabant patio show 5 to 7, and then we'll have that opening game. We have to start with this big news with Delaware football running back Wes Hills and a couple defensive players, Brandon. News that these guys are not going to be out on the field tomorrow when the rest of the team opens up their practice.
Yeah, it's something that we're definitely going to keep tracking. First reported by the News Journal and Kevin Tressolini that perhaps these three wouldn't be available to start preseason with the team, and it's been confirmed by him in his report on Tuesday, and then also by us with some official word from the Delaware Athletic Department earlier this morning. Wes Hills and Larry Spears will not be with the team to start camp and could return. Jayshon Thompson will not return. That's all we really know. They said that these three players failed to meet quote-unquote minimum expectations on the team that Coach Danny Rocco has set out for them. We don't know much beyond that, but as we'll get to in this show, three impact players. And just to start, Jayshon Thompson led the team in sacks last year, 7 sacks, and was expected to have a larger role on the team as they transitioned to the 3-4. And Wes Hills, you know about him if you're a Delaware football fan. Last year averaged 8.3 yards per carry. In my eyes, was a front runner to be an All-CAA selection. A lot of deep running backs in the CAA, but he is certainly a class above the rest, I think. A big physical runner and a team captain as well. So some question marks heading into the preseason for the Delaware football team.
Well, as you mentioned, we're not entirely sure the circumstances of these absences, but what we heard from Coach Rocco in the athletic department that there's expectations that they haven't met, and we heard about that tweet from Kevin Tressolini from the News Journal. So Amid, on a very first impression type basis here, when you lose a running back like Wes Hills, obviously running back is a talented position on this team. They have Thomas Jefferson and Kareem Williams. But we'll start with Hills, and then we'll go to the defensive players after that. Let's assume that he does not come back. We'll go worst-case scenario here. If Wes Hills is not on the team at the start of this season, how much of a difference is that going to make for this team?
Well, he was definitely one of more of my favorite running backs to watch. This team, when you saw the depth in some of these positions, running back definitely was one of the first to pop up, and they had that depth, and we saw different running backs used last year. So, again, this team, they are fortunate that they do have some players back there, but now you're getting a little bit thinner now, so it's someone you're going to miss. And now you're scratching your head a little bit, like, who's that guy to step up?
Yeah, so Brandon, on a first like I just asked Amid here, that first guy to step up, is it Jefferson Williams? You think this is going to be a dual backfield? I don't want to get too ahead of myself because this is a guy who could come back, but do you feel confident in what they have in the backfield if Hills was not to be on this team?
Yes, but I do think it's a big loss. I think of those three guys, Hills, Williams, and Jefferson, Hills was by far the most dynamic. They did, however, get by when they didn't have him last year. Hills missed all or parts of four games last year due to injury, and in the year prior, missed pretty much all of the season. And Thomas Jefferson and Kareem Williams were certainly in that year able to hold things down. Jefferson ran for almost 1,000 yards and was Offensive Rookie of the Year, and Kareem Williams, I think, averaged over 5 yards a carry. So they're capable running backs, but I don't think they're quite the same threat that Wes Hills was. Wes Hills looks like an NFL running back. He's big, he's strong, he's physical. The other two guys are a little bit smaller. They have a good offensive line, they're productive players, but they're not the same as Wes Hills. I think they'll get by without him, if that's the case, but he is a big loss.
And don't forget, Jalen Randolph is gone, and he was somebody who this team
goal
had.
Goal line guy in
goal
a lot
line,
of situations.
Physical runner, and then you could insert Jefferson as that back who could get outside. Kareem Williams, a very good third down back, good hands, can catch passes out of the backfield. But most NFL-ready back, as I think you mentioned, Amid, it's Wes Hills here, what this team has and what he's been able to do. So that's one of the losses, potential losses for this team. The other ones are on defense, Jashawn Thompson and Larry Sears.
Yeah, and I think Thompson is a player that was going to come in under the radar this year, but perhaps be one of their biggest impact players defensively. Last year, he was an outside linebacker to start the year, but moved to defensive end about halfway through the season and thrived in that role as a speed end, like a Vinnie Curry-type player, Brandon Graham, and had 7 sacks to lead the team, which was third in the CAA. As a 3-4 outside linebacker, he'd be doing much of the same. He'd be that guy who's rushing the quarterback more often than not, with Jackson, Bell, and Reeder deployed as man-to-man guys against tight ends and running backs or zone guys in the middle of the field. But Thompson would still be free to rush the passer a lot. And I think there are other options behind him. We can get into that as well. And they still have players like Bilal Nichols and Blaine Woodson on the D-line to provide that pressure up front. But I do think that he would have been a huge contributor on this team, even as a backup last year, 7 sacks. So if he gets more touches, more time actually out there with the first team, 10 sacks I don't think was a far-fetched thing for him. So I think that's a big loss as well. And he won't be coming back. He is a loss at this point.
So he's the one that we know is out at this point. And now from the linebacking core, a lot of people are high on Colby Reeder and what he did in high school, and his brother Troy going to be in the linebacking core as well. So you could have two brothers out there working together. The good news for this team, if these losses do come to fruition and they are in fact all of them, or at least these two defensive players, not back, is that they do have considerable depth where you don't...
I think these are the two spots maybe on the team where they had the most depth,
So lucky them based on what's going on here. Not the end of the world, but you're hearing a lot of immediate reaction from the Delaware fan base. Next man up. We got to move forward.
Yeah, because you lose the depth at linebacker. It'd be interesting to see if Colby Reeder gets a chance. Based off early projections, I think Reeder would be a backup behind Anthony Jackson, but they don't have much experience in that pass-rushing role behind Jashawn Thompson. It could be Armin Ware or Aaron Donaldson. If they don't feel comfortable with those two options, they could move a guy like Colby Reeder out of position a little bit and try him as that fourth outside linebacker, or even move around Reeder and Bell and Jackson from their positions and try them. They still have a lot of time to experiment with those four guys, but Spears is another guy who could have been an option if they wanted to move a middle linebacker outside. They lose him. They still have Jalen Kindle, but again, their options are depleted. You don't want to start the year with less options than you thought you would, because who knows if something happens to the guys that they have left, and they would need the next man after that. And at some point, your depth runs out. So it's not a great way to start camp.
We are talking about Delaware football here on the Cage, Blue Hen Sports Cage, just getting started here for the next couple hours. They had Media Day earlier this week, and that is where this situation stemmed from, where Coach Rocco had conversations with Kevin Tressolini from the News Journal in saying that these players are not in at this moment, and they won't be starting tomorrow when the team begins practice. So to go back to Media Day and some of the other things that went on there, Of course, you had your typical pictures and meet and greets and a lot of it going on with the other teams in the CAA. We were able to see the preseason CAA poll. This team, Delaware, picked 5th. A lot of people surprised, others not caring as much with that, thinking that it may be appropriate. So 5th overall for a team that was not near the 5th spot in the CAA last year. New coach Danny Rocco. I know what you were talking about beforehand, Brandon. You thought this was a tad high. Elaborate a little bit on that and maybe what you think they should have been, could have been, and is this eventually an appropriate billing for where this team could end up?
I think they could end up in this spot, but I was a little surprised to see them this high. They're in the top half of the CAA. I thought that middle group, 6, 7, 8, was probably where they were going to land, but I think the coaches and media relations personnel saw a team that lost a lot of close games last year and now has a veteran head coach. You would think, theoretically, that they win more of those close games than they lose this year, and compared to some other teams in this conference, they've lost a lot less talent. We're not as familiar with these other teams, so maybe some of the teams that came in just behind them, Albany, William & Mary, Stony Brook, maybe they lost some more talent than Delaware, which is probably the case. Delaware didn't lose that many starters from last year. But on the surface, I was a little surprised because that's a pretty high hike up from where they finished at the end of last year. And at the same token, they haven't lost that many players, but they haven't necessarily added guys who are going to be impact players from day one.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of these. I see at number 7 is Rocco's old team, Richmond, and then you got James Madison at number 2. I'll have to agree with Brandon. James Madison's at number one. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the whole top 25 for the FCS.
Okay.
But yeah. Sorry. No, James Madison is at number
Richmond
one. JMU is at number one. I would probably have them 6 or 7. Could you repeat one more time where you think they should actually be?
I said in that middle tier.
Okay.
6, 7, 8.
So we're not too far off.
And it's not even that far from where they landed. I was just a little surprised with how high they went.
Okay. Same thing with me. I think they're just a little bit too high. I wouldn't be surprised if they do end up finishing number 5 or number 4. But again, for me, I personally like that number 6. But the pressure is on now for Coach Rocco and the Blue Hens football team to really produce here. I think they're kind of really ranking them, Teddy, on ceiling and potential, and I think that's really what happens in a lot of football preseason rankings.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when you go back on last season and the close games that they lost, maybe games they should have won, just looking at the 2016 schedule, they lost to William & Mary. I think you were at that game.
They were up 14-7 heading into the fourth quarter.
Final score 24-17. That was on October 15th. They lost to Maine the previous weekend. That was October.
I was also there.
That was October 8th. They lost
Brandon,
by
you might
a
have
touchdown.
Stopped going to some of these games.
And West Hills fumbled the ball on the final drive. Maine picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown.
And then they laid an egg at home on the 22nd in a 28-3 loss to Stony Brook. All of those teams that they lost those games that you would have thought they'd be more competitive in or win, all those teams are below them. The only teams above them, JMU, Richmond, Villanova, New Hampshire, I don't think anybody's going to argue with those, especially JMU and Richmond after what those teams did in the tournament this past year. So overall, you have to think that it's a very friendly selection for this team and maybe a hope, as you mentioned, by media relations or a prediction by media relations and other coaches that with a veteran roster and a lot of starters returning and a coach that has gotten the job done in the CAA before, that they'll win those close games next year.
Right, and it makes sense when you put it that way. Albany's right behind them. They beat them. They beat Towson, the other team that's below them. They don't play New Hampshire, Elon, or Rhode Island. But Elon and Rhode Island were bottom-tier CAA teams. So if they pull off all three of those close games, the Stony Brook game wasn't close, but I think we expected a bit closer of a game there. If they win 2 of those 3, they would be 5th or 6th in the CAA. So I guess that's where they expect them to be with Danny Rocco in charge.
Well, I mean, a lot of people would be thrilled with a 5th-place finish after back-to-back four-win seasons and finishing 10th this past year in a small CAA league. So, you know, a lot of people would be happy with that, and there's a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and hopefully it's not thwarted too much by the potential losses of Thompson, Sears, and Hills. Still to be determined there with a couple of those players. Looking into some other notables from the CAA Media Day, they brought out the releases for CAA preseason all-conference teams, offensively and defensively. We'll go offensively first. We have one Blue Hen represented. That's offensive lineman Brody Kern, who we figure to have a very critical impact on what should be a very talented Blue Hens offensive line.
This will be his fourth straight season starting at center. Last year was second-team All-CAA. The year before that, he was third-team All-CAA. He's not unfamiliar with these grounds as being on a CAA team. Last year, the Blue Hens were towards the top of the CAA as a team in rushing. They finished second in rushing offense in terms of yards per game, and you have to figure that the center is in the middle of all of that, in Brody Kern calling out protections and setting the offensive line on the right course. Between him and Connor Bosick, those were really the leaders last year, and Kern again returns and is expected to be on that All-CAA team at the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking at some of the other offensive selections for the preseason. You know, we mistakenly identified Brian Shore as a graduating senior.
Maybe hopefully.
Hopefully identified Brian Shore as a graduating JMU Duke, but he'll be back for the national champion JMU team. He's in there as a quarterback. And some other notables, Devontae Dedmon, I remember he killed the Blue Hens from William & Mary. He killed them 2 years in a row. Jonathan Klutsterman, a tight end from James Madison, an impact player for them. Several Dukes in there, and a couple players from other teams as well, but you know, you lose some impact players every year, and for the Blue Hens, they're not a team that has been known over these past several seasons with the offensive stud in the skill positions. They've got some defensive representation, and when we look there now, Bilal Nichols and Charles Bell, two guys that are there as upperclassmen leaders for this team, and again, a defense that we expect, even with the potential losses for Thompson and Sears, to be very good.
Last year, Charles Bell was fourth in the conference in tackles and tied for fifth in tackles for a loss. He's a beast. 217 tackles in his career in about three seasons of starting. And then Troy Reeder, we know what this guy can do. Coming over from Penn State, was all Big Ten freshman team there. Came over here last year at Delaware and had a few games where you really saw a lot of that potential. Against Albany, had a sack, an interception, a forced fumble, was all over the place, won CAA Defensive Player of the Week that week. Was second on this team in tackles with 63 last year and was second team All-CAA, 35th in the conference in tackles. And he was weight room champion this past spring. I think combined between three different exercises, went over 1,000 yards and all the different lifts. He doesn't look all that huge when you were standing next to him. He's a big guy, but he didn't look like a massive guy. But he plays quick and fast in space. And both of those guys, I think, give the Blue Hens chances in any week defensively. Not even to mention Bilal Nichols on the D-line as well.
So we've talked about the defensive line and the linebacking core. Look at the secondary. We haven't mentioned that much over the last couple of weeks. They have a very good and a very deep secondary on the surface in Justin Watson, Ray Jones, Nasir Adderley, and Malcolm Brown. And don't forget about a guy like Tenny Adewusi, who is going to be battling, we assume, for a starting position. But it's a defense that is pretty deep across the board. This is what I want to ask you, Amid. In reference to Wes Hills, the offensive player running back who is under review for the issues that's gone on internally. We don't have any other information going on with that. He's a captain. He was selected as a captain. What's your approach, if you're Coach Rocco now, in terms of a captain that's in disciplinary or under review here? Do you think, what do you see as the example that's being set here? A new regime, a new coach, and a very good defense with a couple captains, but when one of your captains is away from the team for matters that we assume are not too desirable, what's your reaction to that, and how do you think he approaches this over the next couple days?
I mean, yeah, you don't really expect something like this from really one of your five-year guys, and this is someone who's put up a lot of great numbers for the University of Delaware, rushing, catching, touchdowns, whatever it may be. This guy that is up there in the all-time ranks, really, for running back, specifically for the University of Delaware. So it kind of sucks to see that. You expect more out of that. Again, if he's not there for the rest of this year, or if he misses a few games, or whatever the case may be, this team's going to hurt. And again, a tough schedule right off the jump. So they need this guy really to be here, not at the start of the training camp, but really start of the first game, the second game, the third game. Especially when there's question marks around your team as far as quarterbacks or, you know, the number one tight end or the number one wide receiver. So with a lot of question marks already in this team and this team expected to be the fifth best team in their conference, this is the last thing you really need. And again, a little, I don't want to use the word disappointing because, you know, it's we just now hearing about this, still developments to be made, but you don't want to see this, you know, out of one of your seniors.
I'll go and say it's disappointing. The term they're using is minimum team expectations. And if a fifth-year player and the player who is a team captain can't meet minimum expectations, then there's a problem. And it's a very poor example to set for the young players coming into this program that are bright-eyed, have not been through a preseason yet, are getting brought into this team with a new coach. There's a lot of hope and excitement around this. But you need some veteran leaders to kind of show everybody the ropes. As things change, you'll lean on the guys who have been through different experiences in the past, the guys who've been through last year's coaching change and had Brock and Dotton Carter and now have a new coach in Rocco. You lean on those leaders to guide the young players. Something that comes from a player is oftentimes more meaningful than something that comes from a coach. So when a leader of the team, a elected leader in Wes Hills, a team captain, can't meet the minimum expectations for your team, it's not a good look and not a great way to get started with preseason. You expect those four captains out of your 100 players to be the four that are the most rock solid on and off the field.
And we know Coach Rocco, and we've talked to him on the show before, and we know what the athletic department is looking to do as a whole, win the right way, that we hear AD Chrissy Raywalk talk about that a lot. And for Coach Rocco, this is a guy who is a great coach at what he's done at Liberty and Richmond, and we hope for much of the same here at Delaware, but he's not dealing with this, and you hope no coach is going to deal with this, but you have to think internally, this is going to be kept very, very much hush, or put to bed immediately, and something's going to happen. But you think as a new coach and a new system and everything getting started, that's the last thing he wants to deal with.
Right. And I don't know Wes Hills. I don't know what happened that is preventing him from being a part of preseason this fall. But like you said, Teddy, it's not the way, regardless of whatever happened, this type of news is not what you want coming out on media day as your team gets ready for a season that a lot of fans and team members and people around this school are really excited about.
So the Blue Hens football team is officially back today. Today is their first day back, July 27th. They have a dinner right about now. It started at 5 p.m., and then they have meetings into tonight, and they begin on-field practice tomorrow. As we shift our attention towards on-field practice, are there any position groups, and I think I know where we may be headed here with this, but are there any position groups that we want to keep our eye on right off the get-go in terms of people competing for starting spots on this team?
I mean, I really like the tight end positions. We got a few gems there.
Wow. Right.
We got a few gems there. I mean, not quite Stanford. We're not really busting NFL talent like Stanford, but we got some tight ends, and I'd like to see that position thrive. And you mentioned that dinner. It's probably one of the most awkward dinners. Something like a family dinner, like, what are you doing with your life? You found yourself a girl. So that's going to be some awkward dinner conversations from Coach Rocco and some things being addressed there.
Wait, what? Hold on. Elaborate on it. What's the awkwardness of this dinner?
I mean, you're not going to be addressing Wes Hills and some of these things that's happening tonight? You mentioned, I'm just going back. You mentioned first day
okay.
meeting back. I just had to go back and touch up on that. But there's going to be some awkward conversations there.
So you're saying how does he, now that he is with the team, because Wes Hills came up as a conversation during media day earlier
right,
this week.
Yeah.
So now you're with the entire team for the first time, and you're saying, how do you not address that? I
could
see that.
I mean, I could, kind of, they're going to talk about it. And again, nothing physical today, I don't think. It's just, they're just going to be talking and just eating and stuff like that.
I thought you were going to go with quarterbacks as the position group to watch in camp.
We know how that's going to end, though. Come on.
Oh, you do?
We don't know.
Okay,
excuse me.
How Carmelo Anthony's going to Houston?
Here's the thing. We don't know how it's going to end, but, like, we know what the process is going to be like. You're going to see him struggle. He might have a few games.
Who are you talking
and
about?
When I talk about him, I'm talking about projected, I think, the starter. I'm drawing a blank.
You're talking about Walker or
Walker,
Caruso?
I'm sorry.
Walker and Caruso.
Walker is going to...
We got 1 month in that.
Oh, my God. Walker... It was who I believe and everybody believes is going to start out the year.
I don't
okay?
believe that.
I believe
who
is your...
Don't go and say everybody.
Who is your everybody? Who is your everybody?
I think Walker's going to start off the year.
Okay, you can believe that. Don't
I think
for everybody.
I think he is. I think he's going to have a quick leash, and I think eventually, whether it's week three or week four, we're going to see Caruso come in and possibly finish the season. I mean, I wouldn't bet my money on Walker finishing the season, and I don't think anyone else would. But I don't think it's completely ridiculous to say that he'll get a start or two to start off the season. So that's why I didn't pick quarterback. I just think it's kind of not a played out subject, but I just, we saw it last year. It's not going to be too different, and Walker's not going to have that leash that he did last year.
Well, I think the difference is let's see what J.P. Caruso has. I think he's the big unknown. We don't know if J.P. Caruso is Pat Devlin and Joe Flacco, or if he's Robbie Schoenhoff and Blake Rankin, the transfer quarterbacks that have been in here in the past. He hasn't had much game experience, 18 career pass attempts at Appalachian State, but that's a program that is consistently at the top of this level. So if J.P. Caruso can come in here and impress in camp, I don't think there's a reason why he can't be the starter week one. But if he doesn't get that job, I don't see Joe Walker holding it that long either.
Exactly.
Last year he averaged under 100 passing yards per game. I don't think J.P. Caruso can be much worse than that. So I think at some point he'd at least get a chance if he loses that starting spot.
I think it's just one of those things. You come into camp and, you know, Joe Walker's obviously been that guy. And it's just one of those things you don't want to give, you know, the keys to the whip right away. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but just looking at week one, I don't think it's a crazy statement to say that it's Joe Walker's job to lose.
Well, I mean, we can go back now to the spring game prior to the announcement that J.P. Caruso was transferring, and remember standing on the field there and asking, not even asking him, and hearing Coach Rocco go on and on. He's very elaborate in his answers to interviews. He does not take shortcuts. He's very professional with his interviews, and him saying, quote, Joe Walker is our starter. Now, we're not going to sit here and be naive and say, oh, it's Joe Walker. Rocco said it. That was months ago. Okay, they brought a transfer.
And the Mets said it.
Well, that's all the credibility we need. You bring in a transfer from Appalachian State, who a lot of people think is a much better quarterback than Joe Walker, even though Joe Walker's a very athletic guy. So you're not going to stick by what Rocco said. You're going to let it play out. He said that then, and in that moment, during the spring game, there was no better option than Joe Walker. But, as you mentioned, Brandon, I agree with you. I think that you have to bring the guy in, and you got to give him a lot of opportunities to compete. And maybe at some point over these next couple of weeks, we'll be able to get a glimpse at who's taking first-team reps and start to see who's going to get that start week one. Because I may be wrong here when I say this, but I don't believe Coach Rocco is a guy that's going to be flipping things around every week. I think he's going to find a quarterback that's going to fit his system, and he's going to roll with it.
Now, can I say something? So let's say Caruso's in there, right, week one, and he struggles. Now what?
Well,
and he struggles for week two and week three.
The thing about that is I don't think any quarterback on the roster is going to struggle against Delaware State.
Okay,
and then
that's
the next
fair.
Week, if they do struggle, I think
that's
you can chalk that up to being Virginia Tech.
That's fair also.
So the first test, I think, is week three.
Okay. So what if he's in there, you know, week one, week two, and then week three and four, he's struggling? And I agree with Teddy. I don't think Coach Rocco's going to flip-flop. But now it's one of those things like, let's go in the bullpen and let's get Walker. I don't think that's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think you made a very good point about the first 3 weeks and how that's really, I guess, week three is when you could say the season starts. But I'm thinking kind of old school here, and I kind of want Caruso to maybe come in later on and save the day.
Just finished talking about Delaware football, and we're going to roll into the NBA now. Brandon talked about it in his sports update off the top, but we thought at some point that once we finished with NBA free agency, you know, maybe we'd have a chance to digest all
NBA
the news.
NBA free agency will never end.
But apparently it's just as good, if not better, than the regular season here. This happened on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, just days after last week's show, so no podcast. We didn't get anything else to go on here, but this was going on, if you haven't heard. Kyrie Irving wants to get out of Cleveland, reportedly requested a trade in early July. People are saying LeBron's unhappy, LeBron denied it, there's a whole bunch of this and
LeBron
that.
LeBron wants to fight him.
Who do we believe here? What's going on?
Well, so you say we're just hearing about this now, but this can be kind of dated back to the draft night and how he showed interest in playing alongside Jimmy Butler in the city of Chicago, and then the whole Jimmy Butler thing happened. For those who don't know, Jimmy Butler is now a member of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So this kind of goes way back. We're just hearing about it now, but all of this is, I guess, really cool for me because I think that Kyrie Irving, and I've always been a Kyrie Irving fan, and I think he's capable of starting his own team and being that number one guy, but I know some of you guys don't agree, and if he'll ever play with a guy like LeBron James ever again, I don't think so, but this, you know, request is crazy, it's cool, and I think he has some really hot spot destinations, and I think there's a couple teams that really stick out in my mind that I think he goes to that he can make a real difference, and it'll be good for that team specifically. I'll get into that later, but I like this move of him going to a different team, and also because I'm not a big LeBron James fan. So
to me, it doesn't make sense. he says that he doesn't want to play with LeBron because he wants to be the face of his own team. Yet all of his preferred destinations, I would argue, he would not be the face of those teams. He wants to go to San Antonio, Minnesota, New York, and Miami. Miami, he would be the face of that team, but that trade
Phoenix,
is not going
to
work.
Phoenix, he could be the face of that team?
He didn't ask to go to Phoenix. The teams he asked to go to have Kawhi Leonard, the San Antonio Spurs. He's not better than him. The Timberwolves, in my opinion, have two players that are better than him, Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns. And
Better than Kyrie?
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Wow, okay.
And you can come back with me on that.
No, I want to hear your, you know, I think Kyrie's way better than, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, but I think, I don't know. I know the 2K rating was surprised by that, but that's crazy though. But go ahead. I want to hear you.
And then the other destination was New York, and they say they're not going to trade Porzingis for him.
Yeah.
So if they somehow got Kyrie without trading Porzingis, I think Porzingis is better than Kyrie. So
wow.
I don't understand why he doesn't. I think him saying that he wants to be the face of his team and he doesn't want to play with LeBron, I think it has to be credited more to the dysfunction of the Cavaliers' organization and him maybe thinking that LeBron's going to leave him in a year and then he's going to be stuck on this team that's going to be, you know, what they won 33 games, I think, the year before LeBron got there, and he's trying to get himself set up in a better situation. That's the only way that I can read this.
I can't get over that. I'm with you, Amit. How is
Porzingis?
While we have a moment here, in terms of a better player, Brandon, do you mean overall player as a cornerstone of a franchise, or a scorer? Because I would not.
I didn't say that either of those guys are better scorers.
You mean overall players?
Yes, I think as a franchise cornerstone or as a player today, all of those guys are better than Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has, in my opinion, two really good skills, and he is probably the best at finishing around the rim, and he's a very good shooter. Defensively, he's atrocious. Teams that he has led are, I think, 4-13 in starts with Cleveland, and even before that, they were had 33 wins the year that he was the centerpiece of their team before LeBron got there. Karl Anthony Towns has a lot more versatile skills in his game. Jimmy Butler is an offensive threat almost to the same level as Kyrie and is a better defensive player.
I can see where
we're going with that. So there's the Kyrie thing. We're going to hold off.
I think Kyrie's impact in the playoffs is probably far greater than all of those guys. Mm-hmm. And I think he works really well with LeBron James. Late game situations, there are not that many guys you'd rather give the ball to
things
than Kyrie.
Things that you can't measure as far as guts and.
But
and,
in an 82 game season, I'd rather have Karl Anthony Towns. I'd rather have Butler and so on.
So in an effort to understand, Amit, what you were saying, that you like the idea, it's a crazy but cool idea for mm-hmm. him to go to another franchise, but also leave one of the greatest players of all time in the process of doing this, if a trade were to happen. Do you see this being cool and crazy in the sense that it is beneficial for him as an individual player, or that it gives him a chance to win more, or both? Or explain a little bit more about why you think this is good for him.
Well, I mean, it's all about for him right now. He's 25 years old. He's still young. I mean, and kind of going back to if LeBron was going to leave or not in the 2018 season, I think that's a valid point, Brandon, which I think he will leave, but that's another story. Kyrie Irving did sign a four-year extension in 2014. This is before LeBron came back to the Cavaliers. The day before. So with that being said, I'm not really going to test Kyrie Irving's loyalty or whatever, you know, his plan was. But I like destinations like New York for him or Phoenix, although you mentioned Phoenix isn't something that he asked for. So I think that not only could this be better for the NBA, you're getting your star players kind of dispersing, although in the West they don't really seem like they're dispersing. But I think this is good for his brand. He's still 25 years old. I think in NBA terms, as far as prime goes, I believe that's from like 26 to like 30. So he's still well, you know, hasn't reached that yet. I like where he's going with that. But I think he has an opportunity to win an MVP. I think he still has an opportunity to win a couple more championships. So I don't know if you quite agree with that, but I think he can still do that.
My point with that is,
yeah,
sure, maybe he has an opportunity to win more championships, but isn't the situation that he's in the best opportunity right now for him to win a championship?
With that being said, I think he's taken himself out of that position to complain, to never, you know, be in that spot again, because you are leaving right now who is possibly top 10 greatest athletes of all time in any sport in LeBron James. So, yeah, you don't have an opportunity to, or a chance to ever complain again, but I want to see what he can do, maybe get another player or get another superstar. I don't think he'll necessarily go to the Lakers, but all these superstars
isn't that
going together.
Superstar LeBron James, like, isn't he the guy that everybody would love to play with?
It's gone stale. It's run dry. I don't know what's happened. I know they went to the finals 3 years in a row, and they would probably go to the finals again. But you have to look internally, and something's not working. And it seems like it's been since draft day, and it's not working. And again, I agree with you, Brandon.
Isn't
LeBron
it working?
James.
Like you just said, they went to the championship 3 straight years. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving as teammates have more games in which they both scored 40 points mm-hmm. in the playoffs than any other duo in NBA history. I think they work well together on the floor. The things that Kyrie can't do well, LeBron can cover up for. The things that LeBron can't do well, Kyrie can cover up for. What situation out there is going to be better than playing with LeBron James next year?
I agree with that, but that's all on paper and that all looks great. But internally, we don't know what's happening, and I think this is one of those moves that had to be made, and I'm okay with Kyrie looking elsewhere and seeing what happens to the face of the NBA next year.
Okay, so you're of the impression that we need to look at this as something went wrong inside. And,
oh, 100%.
And
yeah.
And so you're not approaching it from the standpoint that why would he do this because he's leaving behind
the best
player.
If that's the case, I agree with Brandon 100% then, okay. Because on paper, it's great. 3 championships in a row. It'll be 4 finals in a row now.
Well, because that's kind of what I open with, is my thoughts is this part of it doesn't make sense, not wanting to play with LeBron, so there has to be some other reason, and maybe that reason is that he thinks LeBron's going to leave next year and mm-hmm. leave him behind in Cleveland, and he doesn't want to be there without LeBron. Or maybe it's he didn't want to be there without David Griffin, who a lot of reports say have talked him off the ledge with similar type of discussions in the past. But on its surface, him not wanting to play with LeBron James makes no sense to me.
Well, so answer that question then. Do you think LeBron is leaving next year?
I mean, tell me what happens this year. Like, if they win a championship in Cleveland, then no, he's not going to leave.
Without Kyrie, unlikely, yeah. But
I mean,
you have
I
to
don't
put
even
that
know if I
there.
Put it past LeBron to win a championship without Kyrie, because he's going to be there, right?
Yeah.
They're going to win the Eastern Conference again, mm-hmm. most likely. So if he wins again, it'd be tough for him to leave. But if also, at the same time, if they don't win, where's he going to go that's better than what he has right now? That's the toughest thing for me. Like, would you rather be LeBron and play with mm-hmm. Lonzo Ball or be in Cleveland and have Kyrie mm-hmm. Irving and Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson? I don't see where the fit is for LeBron.
And who knows? Maybe they'll get 2011 Derrick Rose. You never know.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. We're talking about the Cavaliers right here on Blue Hen Sports Cage. Still to come, MLB trade deadline, new concussion study in the NFL. But speaking of Derrick Rose, they sign him to this one-year deal. What do you make of this?
I think he's well worth over $2.1 million. And when I say well, you could have paid him at least double that, like $7 million. I think he's worth that. But they got him on a bargain. And again, he had flashes of brilliance in New York. Obviously, health was still an issue. He played fine. You saw the athleticism. That's still there, the raw talent. It's some of it's still there. I guess part of it was playing alongside Carmelo Anthony, who isn't necessarily the best teammate. But we'll see what kind of player we'll get out of Derrick Rose, because as everybody knows, LeBron James does make everyone better. He does make the team better. I think Derrick Rose could have a little bit of a resurrection in Cleveland.
I think so. You've mentioned the like LeBron bump, or like playing with the Warriors bump that
yeah.
some of these like journeymen or veteran guys get when they're playing around really good players, and that could definitely happen to Derrick Rose. I think he'd be a great backup if they had somebody else playing point guard. I think he's an okay starter. I don't know how well his play style blends with LeBron in that first line, but if he gets to play in a second team with shooters around him. If you have Channing Frye, Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, Derrick Rose, and Iman Shumpert's second team role out there at the beginning of the second quarter, I think that's a lineup that can keep you afloat for when LeBron's not out on the floor.
They also worked out with Eric Bledsoe yesterday, or I believe it was 2 days ago, so that's also interesting. And maybe a Phoenix trade is in the works there, too. So I wouldn't mind also seeing Eric Bledsoe and maybe Derrick Rose off the bench for the Cavs next year.
Does this Derrick Rose signing have anything to do, influenced by, impacted by the drama surrounding Kyrie Irving? Or is this a case of a available player who you just think could make your team better?
I'll go with the second option. I think because it's the veteran minimum, you can sign that contract at, you know, regardless of what your cap situation is. I think you just bring him in because he makes you deeper and better.
Let's switch gears for a moment and go to Carmelo Anthony, since I know you talked about that last week when I wasn't here. Kind of elaborate or reintroduce that conversation that you guys were having, and how that fits in with any of the recent developments. At this point, nothing has really happened. We're here in Houston, but we've heard that for a little while now.
He's going to Houston.
That's what Ahmed said a couple
months
ago.
He's going to Houston. I don't know how else to put it, but I don't know who's...
Then what's taking so long?
Again, that's a great question. He's still being petty. It's sad to see with all this money.
I don't think
money.
It has anything to do with Carmelo Anthony. I think, like we said last week, it's the Rockets not wanting to trade Eric Gordon or Trevor Ariza for him and wanting to trade Ryan Anderson, and the Knicks not wanting Ryan Anderson in the trade.
He also refuses to agree on a buyout.
The Knicks don't want to buy him out anymore under their new team management.
And it's a lot of stuff going on. And then I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but the Rockets are also up for sale. So they're not also the most quite organized team on their end. So I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'll still stick strong with my words that I still do believe a deal will get done to acquire Carmelo Anthony.
The only thing that's changed in the Carmelo Anthony situation since last week is that now Kyrie Irving's on the block, and he mentioned the Knicks as a team who's interested, and as you'd imagine, the Knicks are also interested in Kyrie, but they don't want to trade Kristaps Porzingis for him. They'd rather trade Carmelo Anthony and a lot of draft picks. One, I don't think Cleveland wants that back for Kyrie, but two, I don't think Carmelo Anthony accepts that trade at this point. He wants to go to Houston, and I think the two options are they either get it done, a deal done before the end of the summer that sends him to Houston, or he won't accept a trade anywhere else, and he will stay with the Knicks. The only other thing that's also changed, but to a lesser degree, is the Portland Trailblazers traded Allen Crabbe yesterday to the Brooklyn Nets, and that opened up about $12 million in cap space for them. They've been rumored as another team interested in Carmelo Anthony. I don't think Melo would waive his no-trade clause to go there, but they do have a little bit more flexibility. I think they're only $4 million into the luxury tax, as opposed to being about $50 million into the luxury tax before the Allen Crabbe trade.
And how bad or poorly would that be, or what would that look like if he were to stay in New York?
I think it would look pretty ugly. I don't think he really wants to be there. And I think the Knicks are at this point ready to transition it into being Kristaps Porzingis' team. But if you have Melo there, I don't think you can ever really make that full transition.
And you did mention New York. Let's stick with Brooklyn. They are getting Allen Crabbe. I think we have to give them also a little bit of credit for the moves they made this offseason, getting another quality player, a role player in Allen Crabbe. They got themselves quite of a decent team now. They're not what we're thinking of when we first think of the Brooklyn Nets. They have some solid players to work with now for the rest of the season.
I wasn't in love with the Allen Crabbe trade. I think they could have gotten more for Portland. They basically got him for free. They gave him Andrew Nicholson, who they're going to waive and stretch. But that Allen Crabbe contract looks so bad now because it was signed last summer, and teams are going to be so tight against the cap next summer because, it didn't rise as much as they expected it to this year, and it's not going to rise as much as they expect it to next year. So I think they could have extracted picks from Portland in addition to getting Crabbe. Crabbe's a guy that they always wanted. They were the ones who signed him to the offer sheet that he signed in Portland. They made it look pretty ugly, so they thought Portland wouldn't match it, but they did. I think it's a good quality player to add to your team, but I think they missed an opportunity to extract more value from Portland because that contract is so bad, and the Nets are one of the only teams that had the cap space to absorb it.
there's that survey, but now we're, you said you think Kaepernick is going away. So you can't put on ESPN or some other channel without them talking about it, because for a while people want to know, well, why isn't the guy signed? Like, if there's quarterbacks that are worse than him that are signed, then why isn't Kaepernick signed? Well, there's been some news over the last couple of days that he may soon be signed. And the target destination is the nearby Baltimore Ravens. And apparently I saw some tweets that were referring to Steve Viscotti in the management for the Ravens, and that if there was anybody who was going to give him a chance, it would be Baltimore. Now, connected to this, and we can't really treat them in isolation here, is Joe Flacco's injury. He's out 3 to 6 weeks here. So when you look at this, are we looking at two separate things here? Because I'm trying to understand this. These are things that happened over the last couple of days. Are these two isolated things going on? Or is Kaepernick an insurance while Flacco is out? How do you perceive this situation?
I think it's I don't think it's that complicated or complex. I think it's very simple. I think this is simply a backup to Joe Flacco. I think that's really all that's what's happening. I mean, Baltimore Ravens and Harbaugh very familiar with Colin Kaepernick as they faced off in that very fun to watch Super Bowl, but that's all it is. It's not very complex. He's just backing him up. And I think, again, quality quarterback who is, if you look in big picture, a top 90, which, you know, 30 teams, third string quarterbacks, you know, guy who should have a job. I think that's all it really is. He's a quality quarterback with something to give, even if he is the third string for the Baltimore Ravens.
Right now, the backup quarterbacks behind Joe Flacco in Baltimore are Ryan Mallett and Dustin Vaughn. Do either of you guys think that Colin Kaepernick is worse than both of those guys?
No.
I think Ryan Mallett was maybe worth keeping on, but I haven't heard of that third guy. And again, Colin Kaepernick can easily, you know, lead that team to victory, even if he is the starting quarterback.
Oh, my goodness. I was watching ESPN this morning, and they had a live report from Chicago Bears training camp, and they were talking to the beat reporter, and they said, who's the quarterback at this point heading into the camp? And he said, it's Mike Glennon. They're treating it to be Mike Glennon. Come on now, is Mike Glennon better than Colin Kaepernick?
Maybe.
Maybe, but to me, it's just kind of amazing that whatever the team...
How can you be so sure and sold on Mike Glennon, but Colin Kaepernick,
because
you're like...
Because they're the
Bears? Well,
you know what I mean?
We don't know if they're sold on Glennon because they did draft Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, but the whole thing is just...
I know
what you're saying, though. Like,
yeah.
If that's the discussion, he's the first string guy. There's at least a role for him as a second string guy somewhere.
Like, if we had the time here and if we wanted to, we could go through each NFL team and we could look at the quarterbacks, and without a doubt, we could find several teams whose starting quarterback, at least penciled in at this moment, is worse than Colin Kaepernick.
And lastly,
is that crazy to say?
It's not at all. And lastly, I just want to add,
I don't know if there's that many teams.
A few.
But I immediately jumped to a situation with the Rams where right now, Colin Kaepernick is probably better than Jared Goff, but they want to see if they have a long-term future with Jared Goff, and maybe the same thing in Jacksonville. Like, I don't think the potential outweighs some of these other guys who are in starting jobs, but you don't think about bringing Colin Kaepernick as in a flyer? Like, he can't maybe help your team win games? I think that part of it doesn't make sense. I think that's definitely something that some NFL team somewhere should look at as a plus, to have him as your backup quarterback.
And I also lastly want to add that his work outside of the it's more than football for him. Obviously, it's outside. It's the community, and to for him to go to a city maybe like Chicago or Los Angeles, I think that's polarizing for him.
Well, I mean, this is a guy that went to the Super Bowl. So Colin Kaepernick has some experience, and his fall from grace has been pretty spectacular when you think about everything that gone on with the national anthem protest and everything with it. But Colin Kaepernick was a really good quarterback in San Francisco for some time, and then it all busted, and it all started to bust when Jim Harbaugh left, right? Isn't that all kind of when it went downhill, that when the team was competitive and then he left to go to Michigan, and then the 49ers become one of the worst teams in the league? And that was a team that was in, like, Super Bowl talks for years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, even before they went to the Super Bowl, I'd be curious to see how many times they went to the NFC Conference Championship game, because that was a perennial 12-14 win team year in, year out, when they had Alex Smith and then when they eventually turned it over to Colin Kaepernick.
We're going to move over to a couple NFL players real quick before we hop to break. We talked about Lucky Whitehead in the quick update. So this wide receiver from the Cowboys, you know, they've got some depth in their receiving core. But Whitehead, I mean, I remember him making plays in key games towards the end of season. So he gets misidentified in a crime, and then he gets cut, and the Jets pick him up. Is this a very simplistic thing going on here where the Cowboys made a mistake and they're not willing to admit it and they didn't get him back? Or or on the other side of this, is this a critical guy who the Jets should be happy to have? Like, what do you see from this Lucky Whitehead situation? Is he, should we not care about this? Or is this something that the Cowboys screwed up on? What do you perceive of this?
I think we should care about it because the Cowboys screwed up on it. I don't think we should care particularly that the Jets got Lucky Whitehead because he might not even make their team. Looking at his numbers right now, I think he only had 6 catches last season as a whole. Excuse me. Oh, that was return. He's more of a returning. He had 25 returns to just 6 catches as a wide receiver with the Dallas Cowboys last year. He did have some of like the end-around explosive plays. But the part of this that is important is that Lucky Whitehead did nothing wrong. He had gone through a series of events, including one where his dog was kidnapped and then held for ransom, in which he has been a victim or has no affiliation. This last incident was some sort of robbery, and he was misidentified, and he was shown to be in a different city and state entirely based off flight records. He was not there, and the Dallas Cowboys cut him, again, for something that he didn't do, he wasn't even a part of, and have failed to admit that they cut him wrongly. Maybe they wouldn't have had him on their opening day roster anyway because he wouldn't be good enough, and cutting a player because he's not good enough happens every day in professional sports. But that's not the reason that they've provided for why they cut him. They have said consistently that we cut Lucky Whitehead because it was in the best interest of our football team. I think they're trying to make up for all of the different character issues that they have messed up on in the past. And it was very easy to think, okay, this guy got in trouble. Let's not wait for a verdict. Let's not wait for him to actually be charged with the crimes. We're going to cut him right away to show what a firm fist we have. And it backfired on them. It was easy to cut Lucky Whitehead because he's not that great of a football player. It might have not made their team. It wasn't as easy to cut Greg Hardy, who has gone through many worse things off the field, but has a much more talented football player. Their whole defensive line has been arrested once or twice over the past 2 years, and they are still all in the Dallas Cowboys. But Lucky Whitehead is not. That's why this is important.
Oh, that's that is A-plus stuff right there.
Brandon, at like the table, you know, when you're laying the prosecution center, he's like, snitches get stitches, Brandon.
You know,
he's throwing everybody under right now.
I'm sitting here while standing up very tall in my chair here and ready to say that's a fabulous response. It doesn't get any better, and it did get better.